Coming up on Tech News Today, how crazy is the Hyperloop? We'll talk about that. Also, Xbox One drops another restriction. Is Microsoft getting softer? Also, Sony to sell lenses for smartphones. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, August 13th, 2013. Lots of 13. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zecker.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day. Call it the news fuse. Or Elon. Elon Musk revealed the details of his Hyperloop transport system, and the internet went wild, ladies and gentlemen. In short, Musk proposes building two steel tubes, mostly along Interstate 5 in California, between San Francisco and Los Angeles. 28 passengers would board an aluminum capsule every 30 seconds to 2 minutes, to be whipped at a top speed of 768 miles per hour in a low-pressure environment. Hyperloop would cost an estimated $6 billion. Musk has open-sourced the idea and requests ideas and improvements be sent to Hyperloop at TeslaMotors.com or Hyperloop at SpaceX.com.
The U.S. Secret Service has released the first 104 pages of agency documents about the late coder and activist Aaron Swartz, including a report on Swartz's suicide less than 3 months before his scheduled trial. You may remember back in January 2011, Swartz was caught using MIT's public network to download 4 million academic articles. MIT had a subscription to the archive that made it free to use from MIT's campus. The Secret Service was brought into the case, and federal prosecutors ultimately charged Swartz with wire fraud and computer hacking.
According to Windows Weekly's own Mary Jo Foley, Windows 8.1 will be available to the general public in mid-October, even though the operating system update is on target to go RTM at the end of this month. PC makers will receive a version of 8.1 soon so they can test out the update with new hardware also slated for October. Windows 8.1 has been widely considered a response to all of those criticisms Windows 8 faced with a number of new features like a start flag on the desktop.
Yeah, Microsoft's getting soft in its old age. It keeps responding to criticisms. Previously, the Xbox One was not supposed to be able to operate without the Kinect on. Now, Xbox One platform architect Mark Whitten says Xbox One will run perfectly fine, even if the Kinect isn't connected to it. Obviously, things that need the Kinect won't work, but otherwise it'll be fine. Whitten also confirmed that you can turn the Kinect completely off, even when it is connected, and it will not collect any information.
Norwegian officials have confirmed they are not going to let Apple take aerial photographs of Oslo to create 3D images for its Maps app. Anyone wishing to fly over the capital to take pictures requires a license from the authorities. Now, other map brands have used flat satellite images for their services, and Nokia has 3D images of some of Oslo's buildings in its HERE product, but only for parts of the city. News of the denial was first reported by the local newspaper, Aftenposten. It said officials were worried about the public having access to detailed views of government buildings.
Facebook just picked up speech recognition developer Mobile Technologies. Tom Stocky, product manager, management director at Facebook, said this is an investment in our long-term product roadmap. Now, in the past, Mobile Technologies built an app that allowed for speech-to-speech translation as well as providing automatic interpretation services for lectures.
Tibet.net, the Chinese language website of the Tibetan government in exile, has been compromised, according to security company Kaspersky Lab. The malicious software could be used to spy on visitors. Kaspersky reports the site has been under attack all the way back to 2011 from probably the same group. Previous breaches had been quietly fixed without attracting attention, however.
Samsung's 55-inch curved OLED monitor is $9,000, but that's at least quite a bit less than the $15,000 we were quoted last month. The KN55S9C was designed with a curved profile in order to envelope viewers, your viewing experience is more immersive. The OLED set includes the company's full multi-view feature, which lets two people watch different programming at the same time when using compatible active 3D glasses. Boy, we all love those. And it's compatible with the Evolution kit Samsung introduced at CES. The 55-inch set, it's on its way to select retailers right now.
The KN55S9C. Ah, the snappiest name for TVs, let me tell you. One sign that Google is the new Apple is that we here at Tech News Today now get you cover too much Google complaints instead of you cover too much Apple complaints. How things have changed. Another sign is that Google's new products lead to a spate of complaints as soon as they launch. The new Nexus 7 apparently has problems with GPS and multi-touch. Chatter about phantom inputs and screen freakouts have become common on the XDA developers and Google products forums, according to Engadget. Google says, quote, the Android team is aware of the issues and investigating.
There's a new class action lawsuit against Microsoft that claims Microsoft issued materially false and misleading statements regarding the company's financial performance and its tablet computer, the Surface RT. Microsoft recently took a $900 million charge for the Surface RT parts and accessories on its last quarterly statement. If you want to join the class action, you'll have to be a Microsoft stockholder between the period of April 18th, 2013 and July 18th, 2013.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a high-quality website, pro website, gallery, online portfolio, and I use it for my own sites, but we've been asking people to send us a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website to hashtag TNT Squarespace, and we'll take a look at it. And today we're looking at the butlerdiditavl.com. This will make you excited about a cleaning company. It's a clever name. It shows that you don't have to know anything about design, but you can still create a great-looking, easy-to-use professional site with Squarespace templates. This is a straight Squarespace template, but you'd never know it unless you already know Squarespace template. It looks amazing. They use forms. You can request a cleaning price quote. This is something you can just build drag and drop right into your template. You could be making a high. This probably did not. I don't know how long this took him, but it probably didn't take him more than a small amount of time to put this together. Probably the most amount of time was finding the good photos to add to it. They're constantly improving Squarespace. They've got these beautiful designs. They've won many design awards, and it's easy to use. I love that I can just drag stuff in, drag photos in, drag videos in, get them embedded, have a easy thumbnail come up. And it's inexpensive. Starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And of course, I'm always talking about this, but I love the mobile ready responsive designs because it really makes your site look right on a smartphone, a tablet, or a desktop. It adapts to the situation that the viewer is seeing the site in. Start it out with a trial, though. You don't need a credit card to do it either. You can just start building your website. If you decide to sign up for Squarespace, and we think you will, make sure to use the offer code TNT8 to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. Two great things to do all at one time. Don't forget to send a tweet with the hashtag TNT Squarespace. We could be choosing your Squarespace site to mention on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Joining us now to talk about the stories of the day, very happy to have Denise Howell, legal expert, host of This Week in Law and bagandbaggage.com back on the show. How's it going, Denise?
It's going great. Great to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for joining us. Denise and I are on the Southern California end of the show, and we have, of course, Sarah Lane in San Francisco, Ayaz Akhtar and Jason Howell in Petaluma, the Northern California end of the show, representing the two ends of Elon Musk's proposed Hyperloop. We could just commute in 30 minutes and be all in the same place.
I'll get in that tube
awesome.
Together.
We could get to the studio in no time.
We could just podcast from the tube itself, that aluminum tube.
Yeah, well, you know, they didn't mention that in the proposal. At least I didn't see it, whether you'll have Wi-Fi connectivity in the tube. we talked a little bit about it in the news fuse, but if you want to know a little more about it, two steel tubes, low pressure, 6.11 feet by 4.43 feet at the widest. So you're not be standing up on this if you're over 6 feet tall. Jason, you're never going to stand up inside of one of these things.
Aw, dang it.
But they can put 28 passengers in there, and they'll be operating at 100 pascals once you're out of pressure. Now, how you're going to accelerate this stuff so you don't slam everyone into a bloody mess at the back of the tube is a railgun linear induction motor magnets. Magnets in the tube act as the stator and magnets in the capsule as the rotor, and that gets you up to speed. They'll only go 300 miles per hour in urban areas and like over the grapevine in mountainous areas. But then at the top speed, once you're going along Interstate 5 or the 5, as we call it down here, you'll be going up to 716 miles per hour. He asked for feedback. He said, I don't want to do this. Although in his press conference, he said, I'm somewhat tempted to at least make a demonstration prototype. So I think you might get pulled into it. And we're already seeing a few blogs, Sam Jaffe writing on Navigate Research, pointing out some heat dissipation issues and whether carrying all that water would slow down the capsules, what wind would do to the elevated tube out in the middle of the valley. There's people weighing in on questions about, you know, whether this is actually sustainable, whether he can really do it for $6 billion or if it's going to be much more expensive. What do you think? Will we ever see this? Or is it this generation's monorail where we might get a demonstration or two of it, but it'll never really catch on? What do you think, Denise?
I hope we see it. I mean, in California, we're definitely lagging behind the rest of the country and the world on public transportation, particularly in Southern California. So it would be nice to be able to connect the two disparate parts of our state this way. The last time I was on, I remember we were talking about the new high-speed, quick charging stations for electric cars. So maybe get those in place first and then worry about the tube.
You're building out this kind of... Go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, Elon Musk is, I mean... clearly a visionary of our time. I mean, he's putting people into space. He's got Tesla. I mean, this is somebody who can make good on sort of these lofty ideas that really feel like the future. However, I was a little surprised as to how much sort of frantic attention this whole Hyperloop thing got yesterday in general. I mean, it's an idea and a series of sketches. And you've got Elon Musk saying, I'm really busy right now. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I could put together a prototype, but, you know, not necessarily my first order of business. So I think at this point, this is a really, really fun idea to kick around and try to figure out what would it really cost were it to be a real thing.
Yeah, the U.S. has a hard time putting together, like, as a nation, like a high-speed rail system. We have, like, Amtrak and things like that, but nothing super fast like they have in Japan. So just to get the infrastructure together, maybe a private company can get away with getting these deals in place so they don't have to worry about maybe theoretical bureaucracies. But I would think going from county to county or city to city as you're trying to buy up or lease the property next to I-5 the whole time, that might take a long time. So will we ever see it? I don't know. I mean, I didn't think that Musk would pull off, you know, space travel. So sure. I think we might see this in our lifetime, actually. So I'm actually going to be optimistic on this one.
Well, to address one of those points, for most of the right of way, they would be building in the median of Interstate 5. So okay. So you wouldn't need to go get private leases for that. There would be some sections. They talk about building stops along the way and splitting the tube. Obviously, there's going to be some easements. And that was actually one of the criticisms on Quartz, was that they think that Musk may be underestimating the cost of those kinds of inspections and permits and things like that. Because even with that median, you're still going to have the government sign off on saying, okay, you're going to build this big thing above the interstate. You're going to make sure it's not going to fall over on the interstate, right?
So there would be a big station at either end of I-5 and you'd have to arrange your own transport to and from?
You know, I didn't see the terminal. I don't know if it's in there and I just missed it. But the idea would be it would start in Los Angeles, end in San Francisco, but it would go 300 miles per hour out of the urban areas or into the urban areas until it gets to Interstate 5. So a large portion of it would be along Interstate 5, but not all of it.
Ah.
I kind of think this is crazy talk, but it's kind of the crazy talk I like.
I mean, this is something, wouldn't it be nice? I mean, sort of like, well, we've got this whole high-speed rail thing going on in California right now, and you've got your proponents and your opponents, and the whole thing is so many billions of dollars, and this all just sounds like a better one. But we know that, I mean, we can't even get half of the Bay Bridge to open, and that's been going on since 1989. So,
we can't even get the freaking high-speed rail to be done. And ten times as much it cost.
Right. This is just one of those things where I want it to happen. I think it's absolutely necessary. It would change the state, the country forever. but I am not optimistic about this happening, certainly in the next 30 years, probably in our lifetime, but a lot of things are going to happen in our lifetimes.
We don't do big ideas anymore in the world as much as we used to, you know? Mars Curiosity lander aside, that those are rare things. It's just It's just not where the world is, sadly. So let's bring it down to earth and talk about the Xbox One,
right,
no longer requiring the Kinect to be plugged in, I guess.
Yeah, just as exciting as a Hyperloop transit system. Yeah, so a couple Xbox news stories today. Xbox Chief Product Officer Mark Whitten told IGN that Xbox will no longer require Kinect to function. Now, in May, Microsoft said the Kinect would be a mandatory part of the system, and it'd be required to be plugged in at all times. Whitten says without the Kinect plug-in, you won't be able to use any feature that explicitly uses the sensor, but you'll still be able to use the box. Kotaku asked Microsoft, does Microsoft have no intentions of selling a Kinect-free bundle? Microsoft didn't give a real clear answer. They said Kinect is still an essential and integrated part of the Xbox One platform. So that's one story. And then there was another story popped up that the Microsoft head of Xbox accessories, Zulfi Alam, told Kotaku that Microsoft was testing, get this, a smell-emitting Xbox controller, but that didn't work out in practice. They were also testing out a controller with a screen and speakers, but battery drain and player focus on the television made this a bad idea. Speakers were nixed because they said, hey, look, your best speakers are coming out of your television or your sound system. Denise, what do you think is the biggest story? Microsoft turning around again on its position with Xbox or smelly controllers?
Oh, smelly controllers for sure. Because Microsoft has shown its ability to turn around and respond when there's outrage and concern about an upcoming feature. So I think that's a good trend. Penter Joe in IRC just said a second ago, we've downsized our dreams, Tom. So
sad,
if we can't dream of the high-speed rail, at least we can dream of Microsoft pivoting and adjusting in a good way. And, you know, to give users more choice whether or not they want that Kinect connected. Then
true,
gotta be
true.
A good thing.
But then we can't even get Microsoft to make a good smelly controller or smell. Do we? Maybe we don't. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a positive.
Well, the example they had was like you'd go into a forest and you'd smell the jungle that way.
Yeah, this idea's been around for a long time. And have you ever done any of those like smell emitting clocks or anything like that? They're awful. I'm not saying that it can never be perfected, but. Pretty skeptical on the odor emitting electronic devices, and I say good on you, Microsoft, for saying, look, we're not going to put something out there that smells bad. We're just going to kill it.
Well, motion control sounded crazy, right? Like, oh, I don't even need a controller for this. I don't need to wear special gear. A camera will watch me, and I can do a dance, and it'll catch me. Versus, like, okay, my controller can smell like a forest, or oh, I don't know, maybe if you're doing Dance Dance Revolution, it smells like a really sweaty club or something. I don't really know what you would do with this, but yeah, there's very little. I can't think of a really good example. Maybe a cooking game. I think Nintendo has a couple of those. So they could have used.
Well, they have those capacitive response on the controllers already, right? On their little built-in controller that comes with the Xbox. So it's just another dimension to that. Yeah, it's not going to be a super great experience. It's just something additional.
I want to see this paired up with the harness treadmill. What was the name of that?
The Omni.
Yeah, the Omni, and then the Oculus Rift, and then like two nose plugs in from the Xbox smelly controller, and we're well on our way to virtual reality.
Well, but with the actual news story of Microsoft flip flopping, I'm just irritated at this point. Like Microsoft's policies, whatever comes to the Xbox, they're just like, yeah, we had that policy. Yeah, developers, you probably made games like that.
Would you rather them do than not listen to the users and say, no, we're not going to change anything because we're Microsoft and we always do it right? I think it's better for them to listen and adapt, don't you?
As somebody who follows Microsoft regularly, I just would love for them to stick to their guns for once. I mean, they did it with Windows 8 for like about a month. And they're like, yes, we're going to keep it this way. And they're like, 8.1, we'll do everything what you want. It's just kind of like, how can you have a vision for the future if you're willing to constantly compromise? If this is what they think that you need, this almost screams that there will be an Xbox without a Kinect. It means that these games, they would take advantage of this, it'll be crippled.
And what's wrong with that? Why is that a problem?
Because the Kinect is an integral part of the system. Why not? And the PlayStation 4 did the same thing. They cut out the eye to save $100, so you're losing out on something that should be the next gen of
How
game.
Dare Microsoft respond to their consumers when we've been complaining that they are unresponsive and anti-consumer for years? How dare they change?
They flip-flopped again. There you go. They flip-flopped
their
behavior.
Now they're flip-floppers.
Exactly.
Now they're Mitt Romney meets John Kerry, all rolled up into one package.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Let's talk about Larry Ellison. He's saying he used to be a big fan of Apple. He's a friend of Steve Jobs, and now he's saying some things. What is he saying?
Yeah, so Oracle's Larry Ellison gave an interview to Charlie Rose of CBS this morning. Now, Ellison was asked about Steve Jobs, and Ellison said he was our Edison, our Picasso. He was an incredible inventor. Then he was asked how Apple will fare without Jobs, and Ellison had this to say.
So what happens to Apple without Steve?
Well, we already know.
What?
We saw, we conducted the experiment. I mean, it's been done. We saw Apple with Steve Jobs. We saw Apple without Steve Jobs. We saw Apple with Steve Jobs. Now, we're going to see Apple without Steve Jobs.
For the audio listeners, when Ellison says we've seen Apple with Steve Jobs, he points his finger up in an up motion. Without Jobs, he puts his finger down. With Jobs, again, back up. And now without, he just drops his finger all the way down. People are saying that he's effectively saying Apple is doomed without Steve Jobs. He says that the experiment has happened already, that we've seen a jobless Apple. Denise, Ellis was a friend of Jobs. Do you buy his assessment of Apple without Jobs? Because it seems like the circumstances in which Jobs was removed in the first place are different than what happened lately.
This kind of relates to what you were saying a second ago about Microsoft, Iaz. You were kind of channeling Ellison there for a minute when you were saying if you're going to have a vision, you got to stick to it, or you're never going to be able to see that vision out. And that was always Steve Jobs' approach with Apple, that, you know, we're not going to listen to the users. I have a strong vision, and we're going to execute it. Believe me, I know what's best for you. Trust us. And that worked with Steve Jobs at the helm. I think possibly if Apple's going to go forward, it may have to pivot more if they don't have that same kind of strong vision and someone who's actually right about it.
I don't want to agree. Mm-hmm. And the difference is, I think Ellison is being a little bit fatuous, because the difference is after Steve Jobs was sort of run out of his company, there were people who didn't really understand the electronics business, and the electronics business was entirely different in the computer industry. And they failed eventually, and it took them 10 years. Now we have a company that is robust and strong, much stronger than Apple was at the time, and you have a hand-picked successor. So it's not the same conditions. But at the same time, I'm not seeing signs that Apple is maintaining the momentum. That could have happened anyway, though. It's hard to say.
Yeah, looking at the circumstances, I don't think the experiments are anywhere near the same. Jobs being pushed out and having a totally different mindset with the CEOs and the people at the board of directors, having that kind of shift versus Steve Jobs coming back to Apple and installing all of these people that he believes to be his closest people. We saw Tim Cook step up as acting CEO when Steve Jobs would leave for medical leaves. We've seen Tim Cook be there for a long time. And it seems like with Johnny Ive still being there, he seems to represent, I think, closest that same spirit of design taking over versus this idea of what people want to have designed by committee. You've got that. But then we've also seen shifts like Scott Forstall being pushed out, considering that he was like a Jobs favorite. And he's just as polarizing, it seems like, from all the reports, as Steve Jobs, a very political guy. Seems like, I just don't think they're the same. I don't think Apple's going to, they seem like they're slowing down. That just seems like that's the sign of a mature company at this point, because computers and phones, all this stuff has become mature to the point where Apple knows what it's doing.
Right, and so do other people. I was in an AT&T store yesterday, and since they carry so many different kinds of phones in addition to the iPhone, I was able to kind of side by side some in a way I'd never done before, and was really surprised at, you know, how nice those Galaxy S4s are, etc. It's been the first time I thought I might, you know, get out of the Apple universe in that area anyway.
And you know, I mean, the,
you know, somebody like Larry Ellison saying, oh, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, ooh, it's a downward trend, it's like, it's very uncomfortable for me because, like you said, Tom, this could have happened anyway. And now you have somebody who is deceased. So it's easy to just be like, well, you know, he was on top. And, you know, without him, it'll never be the same company. At the same time, if Ellison is right, then he gets to, like, you know, gloat about it. And if he's wrong, then he gets to be pleasantly surprised along with everybody else when Apple innovates again. I think that this is, yeah, this is just the way that companies trend. And what does it really matter? I mean, whether or not he thinks this.
All right, let's talk about Amazon Web Service now offering push notification service for iOS. How does this relate to push notification service that Apple actually delivers, Sarah?
Well, what's nice about it is that if you're a developer and you want to go with Amazon Web Services for your app or product, you will be able to have cross-platform capabilities. So it's not just iOS, but it would also be on Android as well, which could be very, very attractive. Any developer out there will say, yeah, it's a hassle. It's a hassle to try to put this kind of functionality in both operating systems. And sometimes that's why companies go with one or the other. So, yes, the Amazon Web Services division has launched SNS Mobile Push. That's sort of their name for the ability as a developer to use the service to be able to push out notifications to your users. Maybe it's about an app update or some sort of news about your contacts or even a marketing message, that sort of thing, the push notification to users of its apps across iOS, Android, and their Kindle devices. And the pricing is pretty attractive, at least to people who are familiar with these sorts of services. First million messages would be sent completely free. So, you know, you're already talking about, for the smaller app, something that by and large would be a free service. After those million messages, every million message published costs 50 cents. Another 50 cents for every million messages delivered. So if you think about it, it's basically a dollar total per million push notifications after that initial million. Amazon says by offering a cross-platform solution, we're taking out some of the work for developers. Otherwise, you would have had to create a notification and integration with multiple platform that your app exists on, or figure out your own solution. That's obviously why a lot of developers like Amazon Web Services. Although there's no word on whether Windows Phone would be available, HTML5 content. Last week, we talked about the fact that Amazon was going to be embracing that HTML5 type app. So I don't know. I mean, do we think that the cross-platform angle is what makes this the most attractive here? Or, you know, is it the fact that Amazon seems like a reliable company to go through? Denise, what do you think?
I like it. I like the competition in the marketplace and the ability to give full features to developers on the Amazon platform. Personally, I'm just not a fan of push notifications at all. So, you know, from a personal standpoint, yeah. I'd rather see it be harder to implement than easier. But from the developer perspective, it's a good thing.
And at least we have control over push notifications in a good way. But I leave them off too. I think this is incredibly smart for Amazon Web Services because developers will love this. I will be able to manage my push notifications across platforms. That's great. Amazon Web Service then gets more developers working on their platform. I just wonder if the platform developers, not just Apple, whether Android will go along with this, will allow it to continue. Or whether they'll say, no, we actually would like you to use our push notification services. Android less likely to do this probably than Apple. But Apple has a history of saying you're duplicating a service whenever they don't like it and shutting it out.
I really hope that if everything is cross-platform from Amazon, that these push notifications are synced. Because I'm tired of seeing on Android, I've got 3 notifications and I've got 20 on my iOS device, or it switches because nobody's keeping them in sync. That to me might be the killer thing. If Amazon really is making this cross-platform and your apps can work and use Amazon as a backend, theoretically, they should be able to be synced. I know that's a thing that's available on Android, but if this can be done, then I think this will be great for developers and users.
All right, another thing that's great for at least users, probably not for developers so much, is the lens camera. You may be saying, well, don't all cameras have lenses? What does the lens camera mean, Sarah?
It's cool. So this is some leaks that came out about some new Sony lens cameras to Sony Alpha rumors that there will be 2 different lens camera magnetic attachments on the way for Android and iOS. So the idea is that once you clip them on, or you kind of just stick them on because they're magnetic, the phone would be able to control the camera over either Wi-Fi or NFC connection. So in essence, your phone would become a nice big viewfinder for this lens that's attached to your camera magnetically. 2 different styles. One would feature for people who are familiar with Sony stuff, a RX100M2 sensor and a Zeiss lens. The second would have an 18 megapixel CMOS sensor with a 10x zoom lens. So nice big zoom lens. What I like about these is, yeah, we've seen the idea of, you know, little peripheral things being attached to smartphones, and the idea that for many people who are not professional photographers, whatever's inside your smartphone is probably going to be the camera that you're using most often, because we don't want to lug around a separate camera with us. And we've seen the SLR market has suffered a little bit as smartphone cameras get better and better. But I wonder how we feel about the idea of it being an attachment to your smartphone rather than within the smartphone itself. We've got stuff like the 40 megapixel Nokia phone, that's like, or Nokia camera phone, which is like, wow, that's a great camera. Yeah, but that's inside, and you're kind of stuck with everything else that's part of the phone. If you really, really like that one feature, maybe it makes more sense to keep this stuff external. Denise, how do you, where do you fall on the whole smartphone camera debate?
I'm with you. I think it's a really cool idea. I think it'll be a niche product. I don't think it will, you know, be super popular and everyone will bolt one of these onto their camera, because as you said, usually what's in the camera is enough for the everyday user and snapshot taker. But I could definitely see, as more and more photographers become convinced that, yeah, I don't need my huge rig that I've always carried around with me to take really excellent pictures. There's a whole photography movement out there that relies simply on the iPhone camera and sees what kind of great pictures they can take within those constraints. I can see those kinds of people being really interested in this kind of product.
I absolutely love this thing, because I know I've tried out so many phones, and the biggest thing that's lacking on a lot of them is the camera. And I've been constantly asking, what's got a camera as good as the iPhone? And right now, the closest thing is the S4. And I don't like Samsung's crapware on there. And yes, I can root it or get the Play version. But if I can just get a good camera that I can attach, and yes, it makes your device a viewfinder effectively, but carrying a DSLR and that being a dedicated device and that's all it does, even though these newer ones have Android in it, that just seems like that's a step I don't want to take. But if I can modify a smartphone a bit more and have this connected device, I think that works a lot better for someone like me. Because the funny thing is, I saw someone with a DSLR, I'm like, well, how are you going to get your photos off of that? Like, well, you got to take the SD card out. Got to do this.
Yep.
This answers my question when I saw this story is, who the hell wants to do this? If you're into lenses, wouldn't you want to actually have a real camera versus some kind of weird attachment that your phone magnetically clips to? And I'm partly kidding, but I'm partly serious. Like, you've actually given me an answer there, and I could sort of see it now. It's still not for me. I'm also not a big photographer, so I'm definitely outside the target market of this. But I think it all goes back to what Denise said, which is definitely a niche product.
I think also it just takes the commitment out of trying to choose a smartphone that's got it all. Right. I mean, I'm not the sort of I like photography fine, but I'm not packing an extra camera with me wherever I go. But I'm also not buying my phone based on the camera alone, because I just have other things to take into consideration. It's kind of like having a Mophie battery pack. Well, if you're traveling or for whatever reason, you know, it's going to be a really long time until you're, you know, back at the ranch being able to charge, then you bundle that in. Same thing with a lens. Hey, you know, we're going on a hike today. Maybe it's going to be really beautiful. I'll bring this when I feel like it.
Just don't take it up in a plane and fly over Oslo, because if without a license, you're going to get in trouble. Norway's National Security Authority has denied Apple permission to take aerial photographs of Oslo for their 3D flyovers and Apple Maps. They're worried about the public having access to detailed views of government buildings, according to Aftenposten. Nokia has 3D images of parts of Oslo in their HERE app, but even they don't have all of Oslo. And a spokeswoman for Norway's National Security Authority suggested alternative ways. One way would be to contact a Norwegian supplier who already has a license. Another way would be to just buy the needed maps from, guess what? The official Norwegian mapping authority. Give the government a little money. Denise, is this prudent security on Norway's part or just behind the times paranoia?
Sounds to me like prudent IP management, or an attempt at that by Norway's government. You know, they want you to buy their maps and they want you to license the ability to do anything else. It's almost as though they're looking at, you know, aerial views in HD of their country and their buildings as a property interest that they get to farm out.
Well, and they point out in this article from the BBC anyway, that there are buildings in the United States, in our capital and Pentagon, that you're not allowed to fly over and map. So it's not unheard of. But even the Norwegians admit, like, well, we know you, there's going to be satellite pictures, but those aren't as high def. Those aren't as good a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, Norway also had, they had a terrorist incident in the last couple of years that was really, really awful. So I can see.
Yeah. You're talking about Anders Breivik, right? Yeah,
I am. Yeah. So I can see how the country could say, listen, I mean, this probably isn't the solution forever, you know, to try to curb technology. But we'd really appreciate a company like Apple, say, or Nokia, or, you know, anybody who's in the maps business to be working with us a little bit more closely, and not just like flying over and taking whatever pictures you want that might end up being a detriment to the country later on.
Or you could buy our maps. We sell them in the gift shop. I mean, the Norwegian Mapping Authority.
Pick them up at duty free in the airport.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be given to you as you board your plane, Mr. Apple, before you head home. I don't know. That's a really good point, Sarah, in all seriousness. And I do think there are probably still reasons not to allow very close-up, high-definition pictures. And they give the licenses to Norwegian companies because they have leverage over them. It's not a multinational corporation in those situations. But I do think that these kinds of protections are going to be less and less effective over time. That it's going to quickly become a situation where the bad guys can get the good maps and the good guys can't, because there will be able to fly a personal drone or a quadricopter up into the sky and take the pictures without getting a license, without any kind of approval. It's just it's a world we're pretty much living in, even if it's not entirely practical yet. So I feel like this is a little bit of a dated reaction.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to police, but once they see commercial products showing up from entities that haven't licensed to them, then they're going to be able to do something about it.
Yeah. Let's move on to the randomizer. Exciting straw poll race today. We have a very, very close race between Internet for Kids 90s instructional video. But this came to us on our subreddit. Thanks to CP Time for submitting it. And then the moving for rent sign that uses camera motorized mount to track pedestrians. Looks like Internet for Kids is winning at 36%. The moving for rent sign in Quebec at 32%. We also had LG shipping retro TV with rotational dials, the old-fashioned dials. That got 22%. And then China ordering the demolition of a rock villa from a high-rise roof. Only 10%. Not that many of you interested. So let's see what CP Time pointed us to on YouTube with this Internet for Kids video. Roll it, Jason. Okay, we're not getting the setup at the beginning.
Can you flip it back? I had it cute. Strange. Let's see here. Hold on.
Are there the kids? Just want to hear them a little bit.
Yeah, here you go.
So you don't have to study the anatomy of a frog like we do.
It's a very odd line out of context.
Can you get it back all the way to the beginning?
Like a sitcom. It totally is.
It's us again. This is my brother Peter, mom and dad, and I'm Dasha. Today, we're going to be showing our friends Andrew and Lisa the basics of the internet, and we thought you might want to come along.
It'll be cool.
Now here's it's 27 background. Minutes long. You can go back to the part where they're showing old-time websites. The thing I liked about it the most, actually, is you actually get a little trip back in time when you're looking at those websites in Netscape Navigator and the screenshots. Some old GeoCities pages and animated GIFs of under construction. All kinds of stuff shows up.
Any Felix the Cats pacing back and forth? Didn't catch that.
Oh, Internet for Kids.
I can't believe how easy it is to get onto the internet. When you hear my parents talking about it sounds like it'd be so hard.
What?
I told you it was cool.
That's because their parents haven't actually managed to do it yet.
Right.
That's true.
If you get a chance, we'll have the link in the show notes. Go back and listen to that beginning again. I'm not sure if we caught all of it. But the funny thing that struck me about that particularly is that all of those phrases are still used. The language didn't sound as dated. It was just the production values. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Michael. Like others, I purchased a season pass of Breaking Bad Season 5 last year, only to learn now that the remainder of the season requires a separate purchase titled Breaking Bad The Final Season. But season 5 is the final season. So if the lesson from this for myself and others is that we cannot trust the stores in regards to current television season still in process, who wins? I know for myself, I will take pause and consider the product before buying another season pass for a yet-to-be-completed show. I'd rather watch it late and know what I'm purchasing than to risk paying more than expected in order to get all of what I expected.
I don't know. I mean, before season 5 even started, believe me, Michael, I think it's annoying too when they split up one season to just draw it out over a couple of years. But before that season started, we knew that they were going to split up the two. So really, we knew that they would be short seasons, but there would really be 6. Right?
I get what people are upset about, and a lot of people are very upset about this, which they thought they were getting a bargain, right? They thought it says season 5, and I don't see any warnings anywhere that this is going to be interrupted. And they did that with The Walking Dead, although they did charge more for it, but maybe I'm just getting a deal. I don't think this is fraud. I don't think you should get your money back. I really don't. I do think that Apple would be cool to give you a credit and apologize for the confusion, because there is confusion there. It says season 5, and this is still season 5 that's going on, and then they're making you pay. But at the same time, I don't think they were doing it on purpose. I don't think they were trying to trick you, and they certainly didn't overcharge. The $21.95 is for the first half of season 5 is appropriate. That's what you pay.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how you could make a false advertising suit out of this, and I'm having a hard time seeing anybody convince the court that just because it was called season 5, that was a representation that you were going to get all the rest of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, if they charged you $39, then yeah, I would have that expectation. On the same time, Apple didn't make it clear, and I think they do owe an apology and some sort of make good to people to be like, yeah, you know, we're sorry, we thought you were going to get the entire season and buy it again.
They could give us next season's Breaking Bad for free.
Yes, they can. Season 7.
That's what everybody wants.
Apple should fund another
season of Breaking Bad. That's really the only solution.
Yeah, you never know. Netflix might come along and dump an entire season on us here in a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris from Cleveland has an email in response to our Litro conversation from episode 815. He says, I began to think about what could be down the road for this camera tech. Part of my complaint about 3D movies is the focal point is fixed. So if you're looking at the wrong spot during the movie, it can be very blurry, a little disorienting. This could add a lot of value to watching content multiple times, because the viewer could have control over what details they're seeing in focus at any point and give content creators the ability to add tons of little Easter eggs in the background. He says, I know there are tons of hurdles to overcome with this, such as multiple viewers and refocusing CGI on the fly, but what do you think? Am I onto something?
That's interesting.
I think that's kind of I love the idea of being like, oh, hey, when I went and watched that again, I saw something in the background I never noticed before. But I don't know if that should be focal point based.
I don't know if I want to be sitting there riding the focus through the entire movie.
Yeah.
I guess they can set it up so there's an auto focus and then you can override it if you want to change it. But I'm not sure that helps the people who have the focal point issues with their eyes necessarily. Maybe it could be a settings thing. There's something intriguing there, Chris. From Cleveland, though. Thanks for sending that. And then Damien in Maitland, North South Wales, Australia. In episode 812, you were discussing the new boss of Flickr. Last few times Flickr's come up in conversation, always seems to result in the same comments. Flickr's no longer fun. It's no longer relevant. There's no one there. I feel like the old guy who doesn't get it. It is a photo storage service that makes its money from advertising to free users and charging pro users for premium services. I use Flickr to store a backup of my photos offsite and to give me access to view them when away from home. Why is it important for Flickr to be hip and social when it has always done the job it was designed to? My only frustration with Flickr, which drives me crazy on a regular basis, is the lack of a decent desktop app. The genuine app is very limited in features, and most of the third-party ones are unreliable. Damien asks a fair question. Why does Flickr? Because, frankly, it seems like it does. We only talk about it being no longer fun and no longer relevant because people aren't using it in large numbers, and it doesn't get any buzz. But why is that? I guess that we didn't come to any solution on that show. I don't know why we would on this one either. But does it have to be hip and fun to succeed?
For Yahoo, it does, right? Because they have like Tumblr, and they want to make sure that people are still using them. Because otherwise, you just have a bunch of people showing up, and then they don't grow user base, and then Yahoo becomes irrelevant. So does it have to be cool? Maybe, because they want to grow.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Damien. And we will stay off your lawn. We promise. I use Flickr. Okay. I'm right there with you. Totally.
For your three photos.
That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thank you, Denise Howell, for joining us. Great to have you along, especially with today's stories having a little legal bent, of course, This Week in Law every Friday, right after Tech News Today Live on live.twit.tv. What you got coming up?
We've got a couple of great folks on the show this week. Somebody from Comply, which helps you make sure that you're in compliance with those FTC disclosures that have to be made if you have partners or relationships or endorsements that you need to disclose in connection with what you're saying online. We also have someone from Famigo, which is a site that pays attention to security, privacy, and other issues related to families and kids. So should be interesting.
Check it out. And you can check it out anytime, twit.tv/twill at our website. Also, don't forget about open mic submissions. We're going to do an open mic mid-year special for Labor Day. So if you are going to be free Wednesday, August 28th at 9 a.m. Pacific time and would like us to call you and chat with you a little bit and be on a special episode of Tech News Today, do this. Send an email to tnt@twit.tv with the subject line open mic. That's M-I-C. That's how you spell mic. Open mic. Tell us a little bit about yourself, why you think it would be fun to talk, why it would be fun to talk with us, and why you think it would be fun for us to talk to you. That's tnt@twit.tv, subject line, open mic. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv, as I just mentioned six times. And you can give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. 260-TNT-SHOW is the Google voice number. Or you can record an MP3 and attach it and just email it to us as well. We'll be back tomorrow with Randall Schwartz from Floss Weekly as our guest. See you then.